Hey, Mike.
Hey, Michelle, how's it going?
Pretty good. How's it going with you?
Well, Michelle, I can't handle any more pain.
You can't.
I'd like to begin by asking you a few questions about how this whole mess got started. Do you remember seeing him for the first time?
Yeah. You guys here on vacation?
Certainly are.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Did you get any clues from this in the beginning of what was going to happen?
No, I didn't. And, well, we kind of talked about it last week that we thought it was going to be something like this. But are we even sure that what we saw is what we saw? I'm really confused about it now.
I think that's part of the mystery, is that which one is true, and is one true and one false, or are they both kind of true? And did it happen either one way or the other way? You know, might not, they both might be false.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure that we really learned a lot from this whole episode. I don't know what to trust at this point. When I first watched it, I really liked it. There was just a lot that I liked about it, you know? But I don't know, it like took me back to what it was before.
By the way, this is for The Affair.
Yeah.
On West Coast Project.
I wasn't sure which one we were doing.
If you happen to turn on your podcast handler and you start hearing this is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
On West Coast Project. So The Affair 409, Michelle. I actually liked this episode.
Yeah, I liked it too. I did. I liked it because it kept us off guard, right? It was I don't know, it was like, I actually put down that it was more like season one than any of the other episodes that we've seen. I made notes and I was sitting here, I pulled up the wrong notes, so that's why I seem kind of out of it. But I did like it. At the same time, I'm kind of annoyed with it. I like how they switched it up. I like how we got the first Allison perspective. And there were so many like flaws or lies going on in that it kind of messed me up. But there were so many truths to it that I liked it, that I thought, okay, we knew it couldn't have happened like the first one, like the first scene that we got. Correct?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I thought part one and part two, both me and Allison, is like borderline genius. For all I've railed against Sarah Treem, I think that was really smart. I just think it was really cool. And then it was, you know, which one is the real story, which gives us all the news we need to know what actually happened. They may be both maybe figments of her crazy imagination.
But it makes me wonder about everything else that we've ever seen in this series. How much of it was actually real?
Yeah, I mean, and is this, did, and like you said, what's really, did Allison maybe still commit suicide, and as she was dying, think these thoughts as she was slipping into death, you know? Who knows?
Well, but there's also like this huge but, because when I first started out with this, I was like, I love this. I really, really love this. And I did like it a lot. But the more I thought about it, as much as I liked it, something kept like tugging at me, right? And I'm so annoyed, I think, with this storyline. Because it's like we followed Allison to California. She gets this great advice from Helen. What was the point of all that? What was the point of her standing up? What was the point of her finally getting it? What was the point of this whole thing? It was like we followed her throughout 4 years to see her evolve as a character and really get who she was, and then she dies.
Do you want me to channel my Sarah Treem to you, Michelle, and answer that?
Please do.
I think Sarah Treem is trying to say, you can stand up for yourself and be honest and not let people railroad you, but you have to be careful about it. Because in the part two part of this, Allison seems to be, she seems to be forming a strategy to like, okay, I better be careful with this because this guy looks dangerous and I can't just tell him. Because she hems and haws and hints around about the asking about the wife until she gets angry and then she finally asks it and then it blows up. But I don't know. I don't know if it's a bit of a warning from Sarah Treem, like stand up for yourself, but make sure you do it in the right setting or do it in the right way. But I think that's what that meeting with Helen was, is that you got to stand up for yourself at some point at any or all costs. And this cost was pretty big to Allison.
Yeah, I guess I can go along with that. I'm also going to say, though, that the Ben that we saw in part two is not like the Ben we've ever seen. It didn't even seem real to me at all.
But that's because I actually believe that, though, that people can fool other people like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People can put on a front and be one thing and then show their true color, so to speak. But they never showed us that being really at all. And for him to come in like that, it just seems like, I don't know. It just, Allison was the victim again in every sense of the word. She was coy. She was timid. She was afraid to bring up his wife. Are you kidding me? I mean, bring up the wife while he's standing at the door in the rain. Hey,
yeah,
I met your wife.
It's laden with the same dopiness where they make stupid mistakes like that. But dudes like this in the world, I think that's how they appear to women. They're Prince Charming one day, and then they're evil the next, and like in a flash.
Sure, and I could completely get behind this storyline if they had at least showed us Ben being some other way. And I think we got a couple of little feelings about him from time to time. I know I did watching him that something's not right with this guy, but I could understand if Allison was bamboozled by him, but you can't bamboozle all of us by him the whole time. We should have at least known that part of the... It was like watching a different actor to me to watch part two.
I think that's how it happens in real life, actually.
It may with one person, but it's not going to with everybody, I don't think.
What do you mean everybody? Well, the everybody being Allison or the everybody's being Ben?
No, the everybody being us. I think somebody may be able to fool somebody and a lot of bodies, but I don't think they're going to be able to fool everybody. And they kind of showed him fooling everybody because he fooled us. He fooled Cole. He fooled everybody at the AA meeting. He's got his office fooled. He's got Allison's office fooled. Everybody's fooled. And I just don't really buy that, not on a long-term basis. I did think Den of Geeks made a comment about how much more of an impact this might have had if last week's episode and this week's episode were reversed. If we didn't know Allison was going to die. And I thought about that for a little bit, and I think I really agree with that, how much more powerful this episode would have been. I understand why they wanted to do it like that because of the attempted humor in the last episode, the little lightheartedness between Noah and Cole and Anton. But the more I think about it, the more I think it would have been a really great shock because they kind of kept this under wraps about Allison leaving. I didn't hear a lot about it until, you know, just a week or so ahead of time. So I think that would have probably been better, but
I don't know. I liked it. I liked the way it went. It was
okay.
Good old Occam's razor, though. It's like gravity, Michelle. It never sleeps. It can't be superseded by the fantastic, entertaining thoughts of amateur podcasters. trying to project our theories. I mean, goddamn, Louisa let me down. Wasn't her.
She just didn't have it in her.
If it really happened the way, I guess it had to really happen the way we saw.
Well, some people had some like really interesting things, like they're going to kind of do a J.R. Ewing thing with this, and that none of this really happened. This was just Noah's book that we're kind of living out a little bit.
Well, that could actually be in play, that none of this really happened this way.
Right, right. Also, they missed like this opportunity when she had sex with him on the balcony and they're really connected. And then she gets up and she walks in and she unplugs his phone and plugs her phone in. Didn't you think she was going to see something on his phone from his wife that he was lying after that whole big thing? That was like a completely missed opportunity right there if it didn't happen that way. And I'm kind of picturing it happening more that way. Like, it was all true up until that point, up until the point that she unplugged the phone and plugged her phone in. And then she saw that and she confronted him. Or then she saw that and she just ran out into the rain or something.
I don't know. I like the fact that she kind of stuck to her guns and then she finally told him that, you know, I saw your wife, dude. This is all a lie. No, she didn't need an artificial. I mean, why did we need something on the phone? We know the truth.
No, but what I'm saying is what my take on it is, I don't know if I was clear, is that in the first part, up until the part that after they had been intimate and she came back in, remember she came back in to clean and she unplugged his phone to plug her phone in the charger, whereas earlier he had plugged his phone in because he wanted to dance. So she plugged her phone in and unplugged his. And I kept thinking she was going to see something from his wife there.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but she already knows that he's married.
Not that, Mike. No, saying that, hey, honey, where are you? I can't wait to see you when you come back home or something. Calling him saying that he broke up with his wife that day a complete lie. You know, like her finding out that way, not that he was married, but that he had lied about the fact that they were separated now. And then that caused either her to just freak out and run out into the rain or caused him to be angry because
she... I don't know that we need that, though. I mean, somewhere in the mix of all these part ones and twos, when he told her in part two that he wasn't even married, didn't have kids, he's a liar. She knows he's a liar. She doesn't need this aha event to...
I'm just trying to find some way to connect what happened in part one to what happened in part two.
Yeah, but they don't want you to do that. They don't want that clarity. They want this mysterious what really happened. I don't know. I kind of liked it, though. Like I said, I think it was genius to have her in both part one and two and then not make it clear which one was. It seems like part two is the real one because she's actually drowned. But what about all these people on Reddit and stuff? Like, what about all the blood evidence? What about all the, you know, she cracked her head. That's going to be clear in the when a coroner goes through her and finds all this stuff. Like a broken skull.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the rocks and the water could do that, but I mean.
Yeah, but it can't leave blood in her house, and wouldn't they surely look in there? I know Jeffrey said that the house, and that's another thing, he said the house was spotless, and he used that word. There was no reason to talk about how her apartment was spotless, but he did.
Right.
And in scene one, in part one, it was. And in part two, it wasn't at all. It was cluttered and not nearly the spot. You wouldn't call it spotless. So that was weird.
So maybe part two didn't happen, just like part one didn't happen.
Who knows?
It was a part of Allison's mind that we got to see into. And maybe she just offed herself, you know. I don't know. I kind of liked it. it's kind of interesting to see now what 410 will bring, besides all the silliness that looks like it's going to bring.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm wondering.
You think Allison's going to crack Sierra's skull like that? Or Helen's going to crack Sierra's skull?
I don't. I think she's going to throw something at her, though. Spoiler alert.
She'll borrow that Oscar or whatever that thing is.
The Krishna statue. Yeah, no, we actually see in the upcoming that she throws something at Sierra, but that she doesn't crack her head.
All right, Michelle, part one is Allison. Look, she's got a leaky faucet at the condo. Ben shows up, and it looks like this is a planned meeting. So that's kind of wacky. She invites this guy she doesn't really trust to her condo in a dangerous, isolated situation.
I don't think it was planned. I think he just showed up over there. I think she's, like you said, she stood him up last week and he didn't know why and what was going on because she seemed surprised when she heard the knock on the door.
I took it as being planned because the way she didn't seem so surprised, she just looked at him like a little surprised he's carrying flowers and a bottle of wine. But I think this was set up like this. We need to have a meeting and talk.
Okay.
However, who's ever right or wrong, that's my take on it. And he jumps in front of her with the, I need to talk. Well, I need to say something first. I'm married. He jumps right in and admits it. And Allison is not suicidal appearing at all in any of this. She's just normal. She looks fine. She looks happy.
Yeah, but some of the stuff she reveals is startling about how she's just waiting to die, essentially.
Right. That's what makes it seem mysterious. Like, maybe this is a memory of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Ben is a little creepy, though. Ben is, well, now that we know what he is, he's always going to look creepy, I guess. But she says, I went to see you at your office and your wife was there. And Ben says, Heidi? Like, no, your other wife, Helga.
Yeah.
It was kind of a duh moment. But then it seemed like Ben kind of walked into psychology land, Michelle, where he knew Allison would be sympathetic to. Like he played bolstered up his sympathy factor. Like he left his wife today. He didn't want to fail at anything else. And this was like something else that he was failing at. And you're the woman of my dream. I mean, all the glowing. I'm kind of a failure, and you're so good, and I don't know. So it was all too quick, like you said before. How can he possibly make Allison the woman of his dreams after four meetings?
Right, right. 6 weeks, and suddenly this is somebody that he wants to leave his wife over. Of course, you know, we hear the wife story and all that and what happened, and it's pretty profound, but yeah.
His son is also Gabriel. That sealed the deal for me, Michelle. I'm officially swooned with the Gabriel coincidence.
Well, that is pretty swoon-worthy.
Allison was swooned by it.
And Allison wants to raise Gabriel. She talks about that even in this episode. Gabriel? Well, a Gabriel. She wants to raise Gabriel. She wants Gabriel. I mean, of course she does. And it's consuming to her. And then she finds out that this guy that she really likes a whole lot has a son named Gabriel. And that just, I don't know, coincidentally, I don't know. Do we know anything? Do we know if he has a son named Gabriel? If that's true? Because we know he has a son, remember, because his wife was hanging up photos that his son had drawn. But I didn't know. If we knew his name, that would be interesting.
Well, he claims to have two.
In this one, right.
Yeah. I don't know. Allison starts using her newfound Helenisms from the couch.
Yep.
This is kind of her go-girl moment. I don't forgive you. You're a shit. You treated me badly. You lied to me. I'm done.
Yep. And that lasts for about 3 seconds.
He slithers away until he notices the drips in the faucet, Michelle, which he fixes.
Like within 2 seconds, what did he do to that faucet? Like right underneath where the water's coming out, he like takes a screwdriver and touches it like it's a magic wand or something, and it stops dripping.
Well, he fixes it where it doesn't need to be fixed, too. The faucet had some bad washer or something to be dripping like that. You don't fix that from underneath.
Right.
Like the part that turns on and off is at the top where the handle of the faucet is. That's the problem. He goes underneath and maybe just turn the water off. Here, there you go. Fixed.
Right. Hope you don't need to, you know, have a drink.
He's
or
a
anything.
Sneaky bastard. He could do, okay. I wouldn't put that past him.
It's funny. You didn't like him in this at all, did you?
Like him fixing the faucet? What do you mean?
Just like him. He was very likable to me in this part one. I don't know if I liked him, but there was a whole lot about him that was very appealing.
Problem with, I think there are people like this. I mean, I'm giving Sarah Dream credit here because I think there are people exactly like this guy. Super sweet. I could have never imagined that he would push me into the wall like this and crack my skull open and then throw me in the ocean.
Okay, well, right. But see, this guy didn't. I don't know if we're just like.
But arguing. Ben 1 and 2 are this could be the same guy. That's my whole point.
But they're not even showing him being the same guy. Who would like Ben number 2 is a narcissist who is gaslighting her the whole time. Are you married? Well, why would I be here if I was married? I mean, just horrible. Who would even want to have a conversation with this
guy?
Well,
he could be Ben 1. There is a Ben 1 and 2. That's my whole point.
Why would she even bother talking to him? At that point, if the guy wasn't married, if I hadn't met his wife, who would want to have anything to do with him?
He's a conglomeration of 1 and 2, and 1 is appealing, and 2 is like, oh, wow, this is new information. I'm not sure I like this. Well, that's what people go through in life.
I guess, but if you're you should be sure that you don't like this guy. It shouldn't be I'm not sure if I like him, if he can be like this. As soon as he's like this, as soon as he shows you who he is in the
words
of...
Well, that's why she doesn't say, excuse me, get the fuck out of here. She says, and she goes to the couch and you're different now, but I still feel for you. I mean, that's what's complicated about it. I don't mind this so much. I think it's exaggerated here, but this is how people are. This is the struggle people have. That's why people don't leave alcoholics and cheaters right away. It's like, well, wait a minute. This is the guy who brought me the flowers all those times and sweet talked me. I mean, this is the complication people face. They don't have this clarity that Sarah Treem has zoomed in on for us here.
I think it's I'm gonna have to disagree with you because I think it's lost its nuance even with this. He's so nice. He says all the right things in part one, and then in part two, he's like somebody that you wouldn't even want to take a ride to a gas station with or something. It's complete. Put some nuance in it. But, I mean, I understand why maybe it wasn't done in this because they were showing us what Allison wanted to have happen in part one. And then part two was what actually happened. I don't know. But I just thought it was... There is no... Maybe it's just me. But as a female, there is no... he's nice some of the time so he can get away with this. I understand if you're in a marriage with somebody and it's 10 years down the road and something happens that alters their personality, how that would be harder. But if you've been with somebody for 3 or 4 weeks and they show you this part of themselves, I really hope that all the people listening to this will understand and know that that is
they
not...
don't though. They need what that other person is serving up to them so badly that they overlook and they focus on the good things and they soak that in and then they push away the evil because they want the things that they think they're getting and that are the good things.
That's not my experience, and it's not even something that I can relate to. I believe you when you're saying that, but it's just so foreign to me that I just can't even follow, really. Honestly.
Yeah, I think it's a compromise people talk themselves into all the time. Anyway, Allison makes dinner for him, Michelle. Ben makes dinner, and
yeah.
the love affair is magically reignited.
Yeah.
Pulls a Will Smith in 6 Degrees of Separation dinner off here. That was a great cooking movie, by the way, Michelle. Did you ever see that movie?
I don't think so.
Six Degrees of Separation. Will Smith goes and scams these people in their apartment and whips up. They have nothing to cook, so he whips up stuff out of like all these disparate things they have in their cupboards and stuff.
Some people are really, really good at that.
Allison's almost out of this, but they pulled her back in, Michelle.
They did.
She asked, did you really end it with her? Did you tell her about me? I don't know. The psychology, I think, was good. This is fascinating to me that she needs to know where she fits in this picture in this guy's mind. How important was I in this story as you ended it with her? This was actually good. I like this. I like thinking about this.
Maybe she didn't want him to tell his wife about her, though. Maybe she didn't want to be the reason, because I don't think she does want to be the reason that he's leaving his wife. I think she wants it to be a separate thing, and they're coming together, a separate thing. Of course, we know it's not in any way.
Maybe, but it's really interesting how you see that differently from me, because the way I thought was like, how big of a player was I in this act? In this play.
So you think she wanted to be a big player? Okay.
Yeah. Or at least maybe not wanted, but she was super interested. Like, how important was I in this process? So he spoon feeds her his mother stories. Probably some truth and some spoon feeding about that. Although it's different in part two. But he talks about bombing a school and he kills a kid with an unarmed RPG launcher.
Yeah. But in this version, he didn't know. It was a reaction. And the kid held up an RPG, and once he killed the kid, he realized that it was unarmed. Completely different story.
Do you think Sarah Treem watches Heartland, Michelle?
Maybe.
It's the whole theme of Heartland is how that guy got switched being sympathetic to the enemy, was seeing the people up front and close, up in wherever he was. Anyway, Ben takes total charge of the kitchen, but he can't look around for a plate.
But was that was a weird place for a plate?
He uses that as, I guess, is that's not, I'm just being funny, but he uses that as a reason not to answer her question right away. And, he sits and eats, and she says, she pushes it a little bit and says, that's what you walk around with every day, all these thoughts about the war and what you did in the war. And he tells her he couldn't stand the way Heidi needed him, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I don't understand the difference in that. That even I didn't get that. He said he came back and he wasn't the person that he thought he was. She needed a man with a capital M, and she wanted somebody to make her feel safe, and I wasn't that person anymore. That was some pretty profound stuff he was saying. I don't understand why when he came back, but I mean, I fully admit I wouldn't understand, but I don't understand why it changed how he felt about her. He said he couldn't stand her, couldn't stand to look at her when he came back.
Because he says, I tied her on her stomach, and he tied her down face down on her stomach so he wouldn't have to look at her face. And Michelle, I had to replay my player to see if I heard that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Because here he is telling her all these things about how he's gone through this trouble and his mother and his life and all this. And then he tells another woman that he tied down another woman so he wouldn't have to look at her face. There's nothing less subtle or more subtle than that he could do to... He couldn't turn away from her, or he has to tie her up and put her face down.
Yeah, and he wouldn't even let her go when Bodhi started crying, his son. A lot of people, when I was reading the comments on some of the articles that I read about this, the reviews, said that he raped her, but I didn't get that. I thought he just couldn't look at her, but maybe he did. I don't know, because he said it was the last time he touched her. So maybe he was violent. Like, I mean, it's violent anyway, obviously, but, you know, sexually violent.
Did this happen after we saw her hanging the pictures in the office?
No. Mm-mm. This is a long time ago. He's talking about after he came back. And he's talking about, like, it's been months.
Is a kind of a happy hanging pictures of kid's wife in the office. So how could that be true?
Yeah, right. And they didn't seem at all like, she didn't seem at all like she would be happy to find out that her husband didn't love her anymore and she didn't love him anymore. When he comes in, he's saying that he told her he just didn't love her anymore. And she's like, sort of like, good, I don't love you anymore. We'll be better parents to these kids apart. That wasn't the woman we met in the office.
Right. So even in this glowing version of Ben, this is more evidence that this could all just be concocted in Allison's mind.
Right.
Because we know that, you know, we have to believe what we saw in the scene with the wife hanging the pictures is the real truth.
Right.
So, who knows?
Right. Or else he's just a liar. He's lying to her here, not, and he's Ben, good at
Michelle,
it.
Michelle, come on. Ben says, all I want is to be forgiven. And this is also what Allison wants. So she relates to that pretty directly.
Sure.
Allison notices things about nature, Michelle. And tells him about Gabriel and how he had all the signs of secondary drowning. And Cole wanted to take her to take him to the hospital. But why wouldn't Cole take him to the hospital? You don't insist that your kid needs to go to the hospital. Your wife doesn't want to take him. And so you go, oh, well. Why didn't Cole just take him to the hospital?
Yeah, that's I didn't think of that, actually. But that's a good point. I think,
because she was a nurse, he just, right, she overruled him.
Right. She was mad. But that was a pretty profound thing that we learned here. And I think we're going to have to take that as truth, too. Because she did walk around with this all these years about how it was her fault. But they've kind of let it slip out just in this season about how Cole was flirting with this other woman, this Jocelyn there. And how she was mad at him. And she even says in this episode, in this part one, that she didn't take Gabriel.
Right. I'm not doing anything you want because you were flirting with Jocelyn. Yeah.
Now that's a big deal. That would be, because, I mean, you know, your child dies of secondary drowning. It's totally believable and totally something that you could see happening. And then we find out that he had some pain that went along with it, maybe some things that should have given her warning and she didn't do it. And then to find out that she didn't do it because Cole wanted her to do it because she was mad at Cole, that is a pretty heavy cross to bear.
It's not like she has the car keys in her pocket and she won't give them to Cole and he really wants, I mean, this seems like another concoction in her imagination, her memory of it. Because Cole, if you wanted your kid looks sick and you want to take them to the hospital, you're going to get them to the hospital, not just defer to your spouse.
Sure.
I think, anyway.
Sure.
Anyway, thoughts of nature put her at peace, Michelle. But now she has dreams of Gabriel as an adult, and Gabriel's telling her to go away and leave me alone.
And he's still gray. Oh my gosh, I got chill bumps when she said that. That was horrible. He's a teenager.
Kind of a sweet, it's kind of a sweet, I don't know, I took it maybe as, maybe not sweet's not the right word, but kind of a forgiveness thing from Gabriel, for Alice to herself, though. Like, Gabriel's telling her, you know, you have to move on. She's telling herself that Gabriel's telling her this, but it's kind of a release for her, I think.
I think so, and the fact that she can't let go, and if he weren't gray, that it would be a different story to me. But the fact that he's sitting there gray just really messed with me.
So she says some days she's proud of her life, and some days she thinks it's a joke she's playing on herself. So Ben starts to play the music and asks her to dance. And they start talking as they're dancing. She says, what happens to people like us, the ones who cannot be forgiven? And Ben says, we need to forgive ourselves. What are you doing, just waiting to die? And Allison says, well, aren't you? Isn't that what you're doing? And Ben says, no, I want to live. And boom, she's back in love.
Yep, that's
sex
it.
Sex on the deck, Michelle. Don't mess with my heart. I can't handle any more pain. On a beauty tip aside, Michelle, I have a counter opinion to some of our fans. I think Ruth Wilson is beautiful. She looks really good in close-ups. Like, they had a lot of really super close shots of her face.
Mm-hmm.
She's really bright and vibrant and magnetic. I really think she's really beautiful.
I've always thought she was pretty. I just don't see the unstoppable allure that every man can't, you know, every married man, father, whatever, can't resist her. It's like she's some kind of magnet that's irresistible to men, and I don't see that.
Well,
but I do
you're
think
missing
she's
out.
Pretty. Okay, yeah, sorry, probably.
So everything's good now after the dishes are done, of course. And she goes to do the dishes, and she notices outside on the window it's raining now. And there's a knock on the door, which is not a nice friendly knock, but more like pounding on the door.
Yep.
And she cuts her finger, Michelle. So what do you think about the cutting of the finger? Think that's there's a meaning to that?
There has to be something, right? And I thought about it, and I kept thinking as she was laying in the morgue, you know, we saw her hand, and it was gray. It was the gray, which is awful. I'm going to have to, like, really get past this gray body thing. But I didn't see, like, a Band-Aid. I think it was actually her other finger, her other hand that she cut the finger. But I was just trying to... Because if we saw in the morgue last time the Band-Aid on her finger, then we would know for sure this was what happened. Right?
Are you sure there wasn't a Band-Aid on her finger?
I'm not sure, and they showed her hand. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they showed that finger, so that
you're right.
She wants us to notice that finger.
Right.
Do you think that's the excuse for blood being dropped maybe some places in the apartment?
It certainly could be, because, you know, you can cut your finger and drip a lot of blood. So, certainly. Although, if you really want to get into, like, blood splatter and spatter and stuff like that, I don't think you're going to have the same kind of effect with a cut finger and a ruptured cranium.
So, if part two is true, Ben slams her against the wall and her head's cracked open and blood... I mean, there wasn't that much blood, but it would be hard to clean up, I think, to avoid being prosecuted. And he was drinking really heavily, too. So, and plus his fingerprints everywhere. I mean, he was there. He's there that night, then she drowns. 2 days later, they find her. Blood, there's got to be blood somewhere. You can't clean up all the blood. So it's mysterious how he could get away with this if part two is true. And Jeffries is saying, oh, it's perfectly clean. Everything's good. Something doesn't add
up
there.
Are they not even looking at it as a potential homicide? Are they only looking at it as just a suicide because of whatever clues they've discerned?
With him being at her apartment that night. He touches her phone. She touches his phone. I mean, that's proof. There's tons of proof that he was there.
But he's been there before, so his fingerprints or whatever there wouldn't mean anything. Of course, you know, and he even said he was there that night.
Yeah. I don't know. Different. So part two is Allison also. Rain, like we said, rain outside the window. And music's coming from a record player now, not the phone.
Yeah.
I wonder why that was different.
I don't know. Just to show us that it's not the same time at all. See, I think that phone thing was important. And I think that they miss something if they don't include something with that phone.
Maybe.
She's so timid. She's so timid in this. I can't stand it.
Yeah, she's very passive now. Well, I think she, like I said, I think she's crafting an escape plan as she's going through this part two, where she's not doing that at all in part one. She's not worried at all in part one.
No.
Anyway, so she puts the Band-Aid on her finger, and Ben is not the friendly flower-bearing, wine-delivering dude. He's angry. He's accusatory towards her. He's angry that she left the conference. She has to make tea because she doesn't have the wine this time. And Ben wants to talk first again, but this time it's just blaming her.
To scold her, yeah, for standing him up last week. You're not going to treat me like that. I mean, it's just, it's so far over the top of what any woman should ever accept that, or anybody should ever accept that. It just, I don't get it.
Yeah, this is a warning sign. Again, this is a cool, I think this is a cool thing to do, to put these both perspectives together. This is a warning sign to Allison. She adjusts her strategy. Her talking strategy was like, all right, what's up with your wife? I met her. She changes that. She shuts that down and asks about his life story instead. You could see her thinking.
She wants him to tell her so she doesn't have to confront him. She wants him to be honest with her and tell her. She's given him every opportunity in the world to tell her, and he's too busy like shoving crackers in his mouth.
I think she's worried that he's dangerous, and she's calculating an escape plan here,
though. He wanted to leave, though. I don't think so, because he wanted to leave. He wanted to go get some food. Come on, I'm hungry. Okay, put on your coat and get out of that house, and then don't let him back.
Yeah, you know, but she has that look on her face like, this is not the guy. This is not the way Ben usually acts. Like, it's a warning sign to her.
But then leave.
He's hungry. It's interesting too that he's hungry. He's needy. He's hungry.
In every sense of the word, right?
So Allison gets him some food. Michelle, do you actually make somebody crackers and cheese?
I guess you could make him a plate of crackers and cheese.
Not really making anything, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see making some eggs, but crackers and cheese don't cut it.
Well, if you have to open the refrigerator and get out a utensil, you've made somebody something.
All right, so she finally gets around to asking if he's married, and he says no, never been married, no kids. And the kettle warns us that something's going on, because it starts to boil over or starts to make its whiny steam noise.
Actually, he doesn't say no. He just says, why would I be here if I were married? She doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't say he's not married. He just won't answer her.
Well, that's not saying no. Why would I be here if I was married?
Yes, it is saying no. He's gaslighting her. And it's horrible and it's annoying, but he won't answer anything. Everything she asks him, he turns stuff back around on her. And, oh, that's infuriating to me.
Yeah, you don't trust me anymore? Why are you trying to fuck this up?
Well, right. And she'll ask him something and he'll go, why don't you trust me? You suddenly go to California and now you don't trust me. Well, what happened in California? Oh, it was just infuriating. Be like, the question was, you know, who do you live with?
All right, Michelle, take a breath.
Okay.
Allison tells him she's been in love twice, and Ben's not one of those. She tells him Cole was unfeeling and rigid and made her carry the grief for Gabriel. And Noah abandoned her for his career.
But she also says that Cole was the strong one. And she was the one that didn't have it together. And she was always afraid he was going to cheat on her. So she ended up cheating on him. So I thought that was a pretty interesting thing. But this was in the first one. This wasn't in this one. They didn't have this conversation, I don't think, did they?
I thought so. So I put it in this one, my notes.
Okay.
And then I think she said both relationships made her like herself. Noah and Cole. I think she said that. That's what I thought I heard. Then she asks Ben to be honest with her and tell me who you are. Tell me the truth. And that's, she reaches to like, hey, come on. She's appealing to him now. And this is where he slaps her hand away. This is like, she might have thought there was trouble pending. Now she should know there's trouble here with this dude. When he slaps her hand away like that, that's like, time to leave, pal.
Yeah.
Or let me change the music, and then you get to the front door and you just start running.
Right.
Not continuing, but
right. If you're really scared at that point. But now, he hadn't started drinking yet. This is where he gets up and starts drinking. And at that point, too, you're around a guy who is showing really aggressive behavior with PTSD, who's an alcoholic admitted and been sober for a while, and he starts knocking back that whiskey or whatever that was like that. It's time to leave. Walk out the door. That is that. That's when it became super dangerous, I think.
Yeah, and he's like looking for alcohol by like rooting through her cabinets and stuff.
Right.
All right, so he tells her his war stories, and they're a little different this time, Michelle. This time, there was an IED that hurt his friend and him, and how the whole war thing was how he felt like they lost the war. They weren't empowered to fight back.
Right.
Then the Humvee story where he shot the kid is different. He knew he was unarmed and shot him anyway because he wanted to get back home. And the kid was old enough to know what he was doing, and that's what you do. If you got a mouse in your kitchen, you kill it, or an ant, you step on it.
Because you don't want it to annoy you.
It's a little bit different.
Well, it's completely different.
I know, I'm being a smartass.
Yeah, okay.
So Allison tries to get him out now instead of just, like, bolting. But, again, I could see this kind of happening by people in real life. You just don't, you can't believe this is, like, the guy that you thought you knew. I mean, it's always perfect armchair quarterbacking to look back, but Ben accuses her of screwing Noah in California. And she
because she confronts him. I want you to leave. And so he throws it back on her. Everything she says to him, he throws it back on her. It was a really annoying kind of narcissistic behavior that's hard to even watch.
He's trying to hug her and kiss her, and she rejects him and says, please go. And he starts being manipulative. Like you say, he's crying. I need you. I'm in pain. And she falls for it, Michelle. She touches him again, like almost maternally. She's like, I don't know if she touches him, but he's kind of like.
No, she does. She puts her band-aided hand on his shoulder because I made a note of that. And it was just so. I wanted to smack her hand off his shoulder. It's like, don't do that. Don't give him any encouragement at all. When he sat down beside her, get up and move.
He's super sloppy and trying to kiss her and stuff. And she pushes him off of her and says, go home to your fucking wife.
And that might not be the right way to handle that kind of situation. No. You know, I mean, she sees his aggressiveness and his violence and his manipulativeness and the fact that he's drunk and the fact that he just told her this horrifying story he just told her. And then she's going to provoke him.
I know. Well, this is another emotion that we all have, right? This is her anger. Like, fuck this. Go home. I know the truth, and you're not admitting it. So here, go home to your fucking wife. I mean, she's right. Angry now.
Sure, but I think that kind of conflicts with she's scared. I think you can be scared and angry, but if you're really scared, I think you got to be smart and try to handle that situation in a way that de-escalates the potential for violence in place of escalating the potential for violence.
Well, you should be. You should try to do that, but people every day, a million people probably don't.
Sure.
That's why guys beat up their wives. You know, their wives should know better.
Should see
these signs.
I thought you were going to say something. They should know better, but yeah. Yes. They should get out of that.
So Ben accuses her again. Did you tell her? Like, it's kind of admitting now. Okay, you got me. Did you tell her anything? Like, did you do anything wrong by telling? Like, it's her, Allison's fault.
Sure.
Just leave, and I won't. You're right. She shouldn't be this bold with him. But I could see this anger driving it, and it's believable.
Sure, but not if you're scared. You don't get to have both, I don't think. I don't think you can show the fear, the true fear, and then show this, because this is just stupid. It's like poking a snake with a stick. You get away from the snake.
I could see it, though. It's like adrenaline. Just leave and I won't. You know.
No, but she says, but I will, I swear, if you don't leave.
Yeah. It's anger. She's threatening. Anger often clouds our judgment, though. So he traps her and pushes her and accuses her of seducing him and how she broke up two marriages. And you say it's your fault, and then I'll leave.
Yep.
And then they fight, and she slams her.
And she wouldn't say that. Wouldn't you say that? Okay, I'll take responsibility for it. Just go. After he's grabbed me, it's like, okay, I'll take responsibility for this. I did seduce you. Whatever. Just go.
Yeah, that's sensible, Michelle, but she's battling also her anger.
And I think she's also battling her guilt because of the fact that she did destroy two marriages. And so she has that. So part of it is the truth ringing in her. And it makes her mad that everything that she's been vulnerable to him about, he's throwing up in her face.
Yeah, I wouldn't say she destroyed two marriages. She was part of the destruction of two marriages. She didn't do it. It takes two to break up the marriage.
Of course, but she did have a hand in it. And it didn't take two in her and Cole's marriage. That was just her. But it did with Noah's marriage. But she had a hand in it. And you could tell that it was like a slap to her face when he said that. You know, she's like, what am I? And he's like, you know, you're a marriage destroyer, whatever. And it was like it slapped her because she made herself vulnerable to him by telling him all of this stuff. And then he just completely used it against her to destroy her. And it worked.
So he shows her into the wall and she falls and cracks her skull, or falls with her skull cracked. And notices the Krishna statue on the ground.
And how terrible was that? That Krishna statue beside her is the very statue that her mother got her to attract a man.
Yeah.
Some irony to that.
And then he drops her in the water, and that's it.
Yep.
Michelle.
He's got to be pretty strong. I mean, she's a little thing, but he carried her out there.
Yeah, she's 108 pounds.
Okay.
He's pretty small, too, by the way. He's not much taller than her. But I could see a guy being able to carry a girl like that.
I guess. I mean, in the rain, and she's dead weight. And how awful that she was still alive. They made sure to show that. Of course, we knew that because she died from water in her lungs, which is what Jeffries told us, that she did die from drowning. But that the head blow did not kill her. But they made sure to show that. They made sure when he was carrying her out and her head's thrown back, you see her blink. She's still alive. And yeah. He throws her in that water.
If she had sex with him, they could find that out. I guess, I don't know, that makes him guilty of murder. But part one, we know, isn't entirely true. So I think that has to tell us that part two isn't entirely true either. Because I don't think Jeffrey's an idiot. I don't think he's, we missed all those clues. Everything's fine. That apartment was spick and span. So part two could not have been true because they wouldn't have found the apartment spick and span. I don't know.
So what do you think they're going to do? It is. And they did do this good. I'm annoyed that Allison is not there. I mean, I'm not a big Allison fan. I'm really not. I never have been. I do see her as being a destructive force, and maybe she doesn't have any control over that, and maybe it's her life circumstances, but, you know, I don't think tornadoes have control over where they're going, but you still want to stay out of their way. So I've never been an Allison fan, but I think she's needed for this story. And I'm really, I just dislike how far we came with her to have it end like this. I don't like the tale I like the way it was told, and I love this episode. Love the episode. But I don't like the overall story. It just makes everything that we've seen about her trying to become a better person feel like, what was the point? What was the point of Helen talking to her? What was the point of all this?
Well, yeah, you're right. It was artificially cut short because of Ruth Wilson's contract status.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't they have just paid her? It's one more year.
Well, maybe not.
I guess. I mean, it's one more year. And on Twitter, someone was tweeting me. I'm sorry. I can't remember the Twitter name right now. But she said, isn't Allison and Helen the ones that won the awards?
Gold Globes, yeah.
Yeah, and Noah didn't. But they're not going to pay her?
Some people also say that this is the story of Noah. What do you think this is the story of Michelle this affair? Is it story of Noah, story of Allison, story of all of them? Story of Helen? Helen and Noah? I think it was the story of Helen and the story of Noah and Allison mainly. The affair was them two to start with.
I don't know. That was the
affair. But I guess if you're the victim of an affair, you're also part of the affair, right? Helen Cole, part of the affair.
Yeah, I always thought it was, and you and I've talked about it, how there's no one to like in this. And I've always thought it was like more about the ripple effect, or that's at least how it started out, of an affair and how far reaching it touches to have these selfish moments like that and how many people it can destroy. I don't know that it was specifically their story as it is the overall story. But
yeah, or the motivations for an affair.
Right.
Anyway, so on the next ons, it looks like it's Allison's funeral. Noah and Helen are together in one scene. See Cole and Athena in another scene. Vic in the hospital. And then somebody came up with something that I couldn't get more info on, but it looks like Helen accusing Sierra of sleeping with Vic.
Yeah, she didn't accuse him of anything, but it looks like they're standing in the hospital and Helen throws something at Sierra. It looks like a purse maybe or something that size anyway. It was a really quick little clip.
Hmm. Yeah, so obviously that's coming to light. So do you think either one of them will be pregnant? Or is that too much soap?
It's kind of soapy anyway. Yeah, I do. I think we're going to end up with a baby. Otherwise, what's the point of that? You know, we have to have a point for these big, big life-altering topics that we're having in this.
No, we don't.
Yeah, there has to be a point. Otherwise, it's not good storytelling.
Well, they would never do that, Michelle.
Well, it's trickery. By the way, it's Jenna Treadwell. Trickeration. Jenna Treadwell on Twitter who made that point about Ruth Wilson and that she and Mara were the only ones to win an award is what she thought. So, yeah, it's a good point, Jenna.
Oscar didn't win anything?
Can you believe that?
All right, Michelle, that's it. That's all I got for 409. Got one more and then a whole nother freaking season of this mess.
That's just it. We have this whole other season and I don't know where it's going to go because are they going to turn it into the mystery of how Allison died? Maybe it'll be like a whole season of really good stuff that we see kind of like this episode because this episode was really good.
Well, there has to be a mystery to how Helen died, to how Allison died if Jeffries is saying there's no problem in the apartment.
Right. Well, that's you're right.
The official dude in charge of the investigation.
Right.
Somebody's going to say, well, wait a minute. There had to be a problem because Allison wouldn't kill herself. And we know the truth, or we've seen a hint of what might be the truth. I think that's it. I think it's a murder mystery now for another year.
I don't love that because I didn't like the Scotty murder mystery, but if they do it like they did this episode, in place of doing it like storytelling, like they did with Scotty. With Scotty, it wasn't like you saw Scotty's perspective on what happened. It was like you saw everybody else like floating around it, and I didn't like that. But this, if we saw, of course, I don't know what else they could show us about Allison, but maybe they can. Maybe they have some ideas in mind. Somebody said, I read somewhere that Joshua Jackson isn't coming back next year either, for sure. And I couldn't find it anywhere else, but I did read it in a comment. So Cole, surely not though, right?
Maybe he listens to our podcast and realizes what a mess of a show he's in. Yeah. All right, Michelle, that's it for 409. See you next week on 410.
Okay, see you then.